looking at Congress going through the seemingly semi-annual exercise of raising the debt ceiling. Jonathan Bidlack, director of the governance program over at the R Street Institute, has put forth a policy study that's actually being released today. It's titled The Known Unknowns, Planning for the Next Emergencies. He joins us now. Jonathan, welcome back to Talk 107.3. How are you, man?
I'm great. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you on. So digging in on this a little bit, my first question is going to feel like an obvious one. So in asking what prompted the study, let me ask it this way. What was the straw that broke the camel's back to get you to writing?
Well, we've spent the last 3 years spending, $5 trillion in response to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Much of that was warranted, of course, but much of it was not. And the bigger point here is that so much of that spending was unexpected. It was taking place, outside of the usual budget process. And of course, we've seen in the last, year and a half that not only did it blow up the federal budget, but we've also really seen, aggressive and stubbornly persistent inflation. And so in many ways, I think this idea of talking about emergency spending weirdly is the issue that no one has really been focusing on, despite inflation, despite the pandemic. And so I think the time is as good as any right now to refocus on this topic.
Jonathan Bidlack with the R Street Institute is our guest. We're talking about emergency spending and a new policy study called The Known Unknowns, Planning for the Next Emergencies. Jonathan, if we're going to talk about emergency spending, we have to start with emergencies themselves and the definition of emergencies. You write in no short order, you describe how the definition of an emergency might need to evolve a little bit.
Yeah, emergencies are supposed to be sort of, things that are sudden or unforeseen, and by their nature, I think, temporary. Mm-hmm. But what's happened, and, the pandemic, of course, is a great example of this, is that we've basically extended emergencies into now being multi-year affairs. And of course, this isn't just, the case with the pandemic. We've seen this with national defense emergencies, for example. Mm-hmm. We see this in the way that we deal with, natural disasters, hurricanes, floods, and the like. I like to make an analogy to, if you think about, the scene of a car accident, we sort of bestow special powers on ambulances, right, to respond to an accident. But you don't have those same rights as an ambulance when, you're going to, physical therapy 3 months later. But when we talk about emergencies in the way the federal government interacts, it's like we keep those same powers being used when the immediate crisis is already over with. And I think that that's very problematic, both from a executive power standpoint, but also from, in terms of all of the additional spending that process helps enable.
All right. Now, so this is going to pretty much cover three basic overreaching areas or three basic really wide areas, the global pandemic, defense spending, and then FEMA, as far as, mm-hmm. If we want to get into natural disasters and the like. A large chunk of your study is on the emergency defense spending. One of the things you propose mm-hmm. is limiting the executive powers after an emergency declaration. I've got to ask, is there a concern that this could slow needed help at the time that it's actually needed the most?
Well, I think there's a difference between sort of the onset of a crisis and then, what happens later on. I mean, at one point I talk about the conflict in Ukraine, for example, where, we've basically been funding that conflict through multiple supplemental packages.
Right.
And I would argue that, we're not in the position anymore where, we should be surprised by the fact that there's a war going on in Ukraine. And so lawmakers should be thinking more deliberately now about what exactly do we want to fund? How are we going to do so? What are the things that maybe we're going to trade off to be able to fund, to continue to fund that conflict? But the problem is that instead what we do is we just continue to do supplemental after supplemental. Mm-hmm. And there's really no accountability at that point, right? Because everyone just says, we need to go and fund this, but we're not thinking about it in the context of the broader budget. And then, of course, you fast forward to, the debt limit fight, for example, And you say, well, how did we get here? Well, the way we got here is by continuing to go and spend on various things without thinking about them in their broader budgetary context.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, if you think about the history, if you think about the last couple of decades, you know, that's sort of how we've treated not just, you know, some of the things we've talked about already, but even the financial crisis in 2007 and 2008, we sort of dealt with that via a similar process. So I think that, again, this, you know, while it may not always be the sexiest topic to sort of talk about, you know, budgetary procedure, I think it's very intimately related to the debt limit fight that we have going on right now.
Okay, so, and the way you put it in the paper or in the study is put the Defense Production Act on a shot clock is one of the examples. How would you define the parameters that take it away from, and I think, and by the way, Jonathan Bidlack with R Street is our guest. A lot of people would agree, and we learned this firsthand during the pandemic. There was that emergency, that 2-minute drill, if you will, at the beginning. And then eventually it just kind of became the way things are. And I don't know if there's a definitive yesterday versus today, or a definitive yesterday it was an emergency, today it is just the norm, that transitions out of emergency status. So how would you define a shot clock?
Yeah, I mean, I think again, there are a lot of ways to deal with this. But one is to just make sure that you know, Congress and the president know that the ability to utilize some of these executive powers are going to be limited. You know, we do tend to do this in other contexts. And so I think there's a way to say, look, you know, you have these certain powers, say, within 30 days, after, you know, an emergency is declared, but they're not going to extend indefinitely. And so that allows Congress, I think, at that point to actually do some level of planning and sort of know what the X date is. It also allows the president to still utilize those emergency powers when they're needed, but perhaps removes a little bit of the incentive to abuse them over the long term. And, you know, the other point here, the other point to make is that, you know, it's also about sort of how we define emergencies to begin with, because, you know, we've seen a lot of pressure, for example, for President Biden to declare a climate emergency, or President Trump, you know, declared an emergency at the border. And so there are all these kinds of things where now we're sort of seeing this creep where, you know, it's no longer a hurricane hit our shores, we're going to declare an emergency. It's now, because they've sort of seen emergencies as the path of least resistance, it's let's go and declare everything that we don't like an emergency so that we can kind of run roughshod over the checks that are in place on executive power.
Which is a bigger problem overall in this country, and here in Louisiana specifically, it's a huge problem, where we try to enact short-term solutions or quick-hitting solutions to generational problems.
100%. I think that's, you know, I mean, look, I mean, this problem has been bipartisan. You know, I mean, really, it kind of goes back to the Clinton administration when, you know, Bill Clinton realized he could kind of go and, you know, utilize federal emergencies as sort of a way to make himself seem strong as president, and kind of, you know, do an end run around, you know, a Republican Congress that increasingly was opposing what he wanted to do. And so there was, I think, political value to him as the president kind of declaring these emergencies. And the result has been that since then, you know, subsequent presidents have seen that value too and have basically gone and continued that trend. And, you know, we just see so many emergencies now being declared for everything under the sun. And then, you know, utilizing the executive power that comes along with it.
We're talking with Jonathan Bidlack, director of the governance program at the R Street Institute, and a new policy study, which is released today, titled The Known Unknowns, Planning for the Next Emergencies. Jonathan, Congress is supposed to control the nation's purse strings, and this would allow more follow of that path, to be sure. But at the same time, Congress can't agree on pizza toppings without grandstanding. So how would you ensure that when you have, and I know the term itself is contradictory, but it's kind of where we are. How would you ensure that in times of an ongoing emergency, Congress can remain with their head on a swivel?
I mean, I think that, you know, while Congress certainly has its problems, The evidence and sort of the historical record is quite strong that when these serious situations arise, we've responded to them well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there was a clear, for example, response to 9/11.
Yeah.
There were various responses, you know, that both parties supported for better or worse in response to the onset of the financial crisis, for example. There was bipartisan agreement about a good chunk of the federal response to the onset of the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I think there's actually really good evidence that Congress has been able to respond in these situations. And in the cases where it hasn't, or where things have been a little bit more, political, to me, that's perhaps a sign that, you know, we're maybe not in an emergency situation anymore. It's no longer the onset of the crisis. And it's maybe time to have a little bit of debate about what the proper response is at that point in time. I mean, you know, both parties supported, you know, COVID aid in the early part of the pandemic, but there was much more of a split later on when we talk about the American Rescue Plan, for example. And so I think that there is, it points to this idea that, you know, we should lean a little bit more on Congress when things are not as imminent. While still being able to lean on the executive when we sort of are dealing with the immediate aftermath of a crisis.
He is Jonathan Bidlack. And this is one of those things where when FEMA turns into the Federal Everyday Management Agency, we end up lost in the weeds and not being able to get anything done and trying to get everything done. It is titled The Known Unknowns, Planning for the Next Emergencies. Couldn't be more timely, man. And I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.